Mr. Lee, President Zimmer, distinguished Lions and honored guests, it is with great pleasure that I am able to rematerialize from the past and be with you here tonight. My name is Cyrus Livingston Dunham. During the mid-19th century, I was a lawyer, orator, and politician of some note in Washington County. I came here as a young man in 1841 from Tompkins County, New York, near Lake Cayuga in the Finger Lakes region, because a Jacksonian Democrat of good education and modest ambition might have good prospects. 3 consecutive terms in Congress, one of only 2 Washington County residents ever to be so elected. The other was James A. Cravens, who lived near Hardinsburg and who served in Congress during the war between the states. I became chairman of the Roads and Canals Committee and one of the main advocates for the Homestead Act. After I was defeated seeking my 4th term in the House of Representatives by my frequent opponent, George G. Dunn of Bedford, I practiced law here in Salem until I was appointed Secretary of State of Indiana by Governor Willard from New Albany. Soon after the commencement of the war between the states, I served as a colonel in the Union Army and commanded the 50th Regiment of the Indiana Volunteers. After the war, I moved to New Albany and then to Jeffersonville, where I continued my legal career along the banks of the Ohio LaBelle Rivers. But as much as it would please me, my purpose here tonight is not to talk about myself. Instead, I am here to relate to you the 2 greatest disservices I ever imposed upon this community, my nephews, Horace Heffron and Delos Heffron. Your centennial history describes these 2 men as smart but injudicious and lacking in moral stamina. Shortly after I left New York and established my law practice and political career here, I persuaded my sister Julia and her husband Elijah Heffron to relocate their family and share in the opportunities I found here in Indiana. They bought a small farm on the Canton Road just east of Salem. Their son Horace was 20 and their other son Delos was 10 when they came here. I invited Horace to read law under my tutelage and run my office while I was serving in Congress. Horace had a flair for rhetoric, both spoken and written, and soon became the editor of one of the local newspapers, which he used to gain his own political influence. Horace also had a strong penchant for whiskey and laudanum, and the lack of inhibitions resulting there from often resulted in conduct unrestrained. He also was of immense proportion and appetite and weighed close to 400 pounds. In spite of these personal predilections, Horace was eventually elected to the Indiana General Assembly while I served as Secretary of State. One of his political opponents described him as a disgusting compound of whiskey, grease, vulgarity, and cowardice. During the legislative session of 1861, Horace exchanged personal insults in a political debate with one Gideon M. Moody of Newton County. A duel was immediately challenged, and Heffron and Moody each appointed seconds, and the terms of the affray were negotiated. As dueling was a criminal offense in Indiana, a site near Covington, Kentucky, was selected, as Kentucky was more enlightened then in matters of personal honor. A crowd, stoked with some of Bourbon County's finest branch water, gathered on an early February morning to witness this spectacle. When Heffron and Moody arrived at the dueling grounds, it was discovered that the seconds had forgotten to bring the dueling weapons. After a flush of embarrassment and further delay, prior insults were modified, and both men left the field to argue another day. After the war, Moody moved to the South Dakota Territory and became the first U.S. Senator from that state. During the war between the states, I was the commander of the 50th Indiana Regiment. Horace originally mustered into the 13th Indiana Regiment for service in West Virginia, but had a poor grasp of the concept of obedience to his military superiors. I arranged for his transfer to my regiment and designated him as a lieutenant colonel directly below me in rank so that I could keep him under my close observation. We were dispatched to western Tennessee to protect the rail lines supporting the Union control of the Mississippi River. We engaged in battle at Parker's Crossroads near Clarksburg, Tennessee, New Year's Eve 1862, with a Confederate cavalry brigade under the command of the legendary General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Although I was fighting to preserve the Union, Horace was merely fighting to preserve himself. During the heat of the battle, Horace deserted the arena of combat by means of a railway handcar. The sight of his massive configuration pumping its way north up the tracks caused much comment. The court-martial was threatened, but I was able to intervene on Horace's behalf and arrange a medical discharge for him. Rheumatism seemed to be of utility for this purpose. He then returned to Salem and commenced his activities with the Sons of Liberty, which was a secret society dedicated to the obstruction of the Union's effort in the prosecution of the war. Horace's gift for bloviation soon led to his ascension to the office of Deputy Grand Commander. His influence as a member of this nefarious group was exhibited when the Adjutant General of Indiana, H.B. Carrington, convened a Washington County Grand Jury to investigate the Sons of Liberty, who were also called the Knights of the Golden Circle. After days of testimony, this local grand jury found that this secret group did not exist in Washington County. Carrington didn't give up and enlisted federal spies such as Felix Stidger to infiltrate the Sons of Liberty. In August 1864, Horace was arrested in Salem by military authorities and charged with treason. He was one of five Hoosiers accused of participating in a conspiracy with Confederate agents in Canada who sought to capture the Indianapolis Arsenal, to liberate Confederate prisoners from Camp Morton, and to seize control of the state government. Of course, I was obligated to provide a legal defense for my prodigal protege before a military court, as Horace and his co-conspirators faced the death penalty. After the trial commenced, Horace's orthopedic problem became obvious. It wasn't his rheumatism. It was the fact that he was spineless. Although I thought the case against these men was weak, it took only a modicum of effort to persuade Horace to betray his fellow conspirators. In exchange for a dismissal, he testified against the four remaining defendants, who were all then convicted, three of them sentenced to hang. It was assumed that President Lincoln would pardon these men after the war was over. John Wilkes Booth changed this assumption, as the new president, Andrew Johnson, did not share Lincoln's desire for national reconciliation at the end of the war. Milligan filed for a writ of habeas corpus in federal court and got the executions stayed. This led to a landmark decision of the U.S. Supreme Court, which voided their convictions and saved their lives. Future President James A. Garfield argued this appeal for the alleged conspirators. All law students who have had to study the case of Indiana Reverend Milligan can thank my nephew Horace. This case is still very relevant today, as it ruled that the Bill of Rights cannot be suspended during the times of war and that civilians cannot be tried before a military commission when the civil courts are open for business. My other nephew, Delos, turned out to be even more of a miscreant than his brother. When I was Secretary of State, I made Delos my deputy when he was only 18. He was entirely unable to resist the temptations of Indianapolis and took up whiskey as an avocation. When he reported for work in a state of inebriation, I ordered him out of the office, and in a drunken rage, he stabbed me, causing me severe bodily injury. This resulted in his first criminal charge. Delos returned to Salem while I moved to New Albany to pursue my law practice there at the suggestion of Washington C. DePaul. I did not wish to remain professionally associated with Horace in Salem any further. Delos resumed his familiarity with whiskey and occupied much of his time at Johnson's Tavern on the northwest corner of the Salem Square. Delos and the tavern owner's son, William R. Johnson, soon became rival suitors for the hand of one Samira Godfrey. Johnson won the hand of Miss Godfrey, and they were married in 1865. Delos did not tolerate romantic rejection well. On August 13, 1866, while exercising his right to bear arms, Delos went to Johnson's Tavern and precipitated an armed confrontation. Not being possessed of proper social graces and not knowing how to challenge William R. Johnson to a duel of honor, D'Lo shot Johnson and his brother while suffering a gunshot wound himself. Johnson died at the scene and Delos was charged with murder. Horace appeared in the case as the attorney for Delos, but naturally, my sister implored me to help, and I was called upon to provide the best legal defense possible for my nephew and served as his head counsel. A plea of self-defense was entered. Horace persuaded the primary witness to this fatal assault to go west and grow up with the country. During the trial, I was at the peak of my legal skills and was able to obtain an acquittal for Delos. The Johnsons were incensed and swore vengeance. Then, to add salt to the wounds, Delos opened a tavern on the south side of the square in competition with the Johnsons. Delos did perform an unintended favor for the Johnsons, as their clientele became more civilized because most of the town thugs patronized the Heffron establishment. Because of the bad blood with the Johnsons, Delos never went out at night without a bodyguard, and in the ensuing years, the widow Johnson and her family remained impressed with the passion that Delos demonstrated toward her, however inartfully expressed. Incredibly, her father and brother each named a child after Delos. More incredibly, Delos and Samira Johnson were married May 19, 1872. Whether this marriage properly channeled the frequently misdirected libido of Delos is unknown. On Friday, June 20, 1873, a patron of Delos named John de Halstead became disorderly and brandished a knife. Delos ordered him to partake of the fresh air of the Salem Public Square. De Halstead left, but returned later with rocks gathered from the street. Delos was warned and picked up two revolvers and admonished de Halstead not to re-enter the saloon. De Halstead threw a rock toward Delos, and an exchange of bullets and rocks ensued. The rocks did not prove to be as effective as the bullets. Delos shot de Halstead four times before fatally wounding him. Delos then pistol-whipped his victim to punctuate his premature departure from this realm. Sheriff Craycraft was summoned, and Delos accompanied him to the jail, which was then located on the west side of South Water Street, between Cherry Street and Poplar Street. By sheer coincidence, a grand jury was in session at the time, and an indictment for murder was quickly filed against Delos. Horace counseled with his brother Delos, and of course, I was contacted in Jeffersonville to once again defend one of my nephews for a heinous crime. The first motion I filed was for a change of venue from the county. Any Washington County jury by now would not give any defense I could raise for Delos due consideration. And once it became known that I was again going to defend Delos, rumors began to circulate that a vigilante group known as the Regulators was forming to take justice into its own hands. On Saturday, June 28, 1873, a mob of masked and armed men claiming to be from Jackson County gathered on South Water Street outside of the jail and demanded entrance. The door of the jail was locked and bolted, but the mob smashed open the door with sledgehammers. Sheriff Craycraft and Town Marshal McKinney were subdued and tied up. The key to Heffron's cell was found, and the mob stormed upstairs. Samira Godfrey Johnson Heffron found herself to be re-widowed. In a few years, she remarried, but her third husband committed suicide. She just never had any luck with men. This was the last of my association with my scurrilous nephews. I remained in Jeffersonville for the remainder of my career and died in 1877. But physical reminders of the Heffrons remain in Salem today. Horace had married into a good family. His wife was Mary Parisi, and he was a brother-in-law of Colonel Lee W. Sinclair, a wealthy businessman who later built the West Baden Springs Hotel. Horace continued in the newspaper business and was elected once again to the state legislature in 1883. He was greeted with great vitriol by the Indianapolis press and was required to defend his honor with a day-long speech on the floor of the legislature. The shame heaped upon him was fatal as he died later that year. But Horace redeemed himself somewhat in his later years. Delo, God rest his tormented soul, was buried in Crown Hill Cemetery within sight of the tombstone of his romantic rival, William R. Johnson. Delos is probably the only man buried in Crown Hill whose name appears on two tombstones. Today, you can visit the grave of Mr. Johnson and find engraved thereon for all generations to see this inscription: "Killed by a cold-blooded murderer, Delos Heffron." Well, I regret that my resurrection is of a temporary nature, but it is time for me to return to the past from whence I came. I greatly appreciate your courtesies in permitting me to share with you some of the more colorful episodes of my times in Salem. I wish you all good evening and farewell.